folks, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. That's right. I've got the best freaking job in the world. My name is Jim Reed. I'm Bluffsterini in the home games and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter while we still have it. I get to hang out here on Monday nights and talk with all my poker friends about this game that we love so much, all because of this fantastic free organization called Rec Poker that we're all lucky enough to be a part of. I mentioned that most of what we do here is free because I have to thank our sponsors, without whom none of this would be possible. That's the amazing folks at the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. And by the time you're listening to this, you might have a chance to get out there in time for our Rec Poker road trip on August 4th and 5th. But if this episode's coming out just too late for that, don't worry, it's not going to be our last chance getting to Running Aces, and it's not going to be the last Rec Poker road trip we take in this glorious year of 2023 either. So lots of chances to get involved and to get more involved in Rec Poker. That's how I did it. I joined as a premium member in 2019, and now they give me the mic on Mondays, and I get to host the show. But I am just one of the people involved in making all the magic here at Rec Poker. The rest of the folks that do it are the Wrecking Crew members. It takes a village. It takes a gang. It takes a crew to do all the fun that we do here. And that's why if you want to find out more about me or the rest of the Wrecking Crew, I'd encourage you to head on over to www.rec.poker/crew, where you can find out all about them. But you can also just listen up because you're going to meet a few of them right here on the air tonight.
I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5b5 on Threads or 5x5 or 5x5 on the PokerStars home game.
And I'm Rob Washam, and you can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere.
I'm Taylor Moss. You can find me at Taylor_Moss on Twitter or GopherBoyTJM in the Rec Poker home game.
And just like we do every Monday night, we're playing against each other in the Play Money home game club that John Zomsky runs here. The chips are free, but the prizes are real. We've got almost 500 competitors duking it out 10 times a week. So come and check that out. Just another one of the free perks of what goes on here at Rec Poker. But another one of the fantastic perks that is completely free with your membership is access to the forums. So every Monday night, we take a different forum post and we talk about it here on the air. This week, we're looking at one from fellow Wrecking Crew member Ben Jammin 96 Enslow. He goes by many names: B Jammin 96, Jammin 96, Benjamin Enslow. He's a very friendly guy from the East Coast of Canada. He's been a member here longer than I have, and he's joined the Wrecking Crew, and he's making waves all over. You can check him out on Twitch. He's turning into a very popular streamer, especially on Fridays and Saturdays, as he shares his fun with the rest of Rec Poker Nation. If you go to twitch.tv/BJammin96, I'm like 99% sure that that's his handle, and you'll have a lot of fun there, especially on Fridays and Saturdays. So Ben's got a post here: how far do we slow play? And he's writing about a hand in the early stages of the $16.50 Bounty Builder on PokerStars. So the Bounty Builder series on PokerStars is a series of tournaments with a progressive super knockout. So the deeper you go, the more people you knock out, the bigger your bounty gets. And that does change some of the equations when it comes to the ranges that you should be shoving with and the ranges that you should be calling shoves with. And that will come into play a little later in the hand. So he says, we've lost some chips. We're down to 56 big blinds, and we are the effective stack at the table. This tournament's given me some trouble in the past, says our intrepid correspondent, but we had a recent deep run, so we're hoping to replicate that. In this hand, we open ace of clubs, ace of hearts in the hijack to 2.4 big blinds. And the player on our left in the cutoff, 3-bets big to 10 big blinds off a stack of 65.5. So that's a little over a 4x 3-bet from our villain here. It folds around, and the first question that Ben has is, should we put in a 4-bet? And if we do, how much? Or should we just call the 3-bet here and go to a flop with an SPR of about 2 with a very strong hand? So I'll open this up to the panel here to get started first. What are the factors that you might be considering when you're deciding whether to slow play by calling the three bet here or by just putting some chips in the middle and putting in a more sort of a textbook four bet. Let's see who unmutes first, and you can jump right on in there. Taylor?
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at like GTO charts and stuff like that, and it's going to like have, you know, how often you should be four betting, especially off of 60 bigs and stuff like that. But honestly, like when you get in these spots, a lot of it is kind of like what has played out so far to this point. And like, how does that influence like how you're going to like fill the four betting range? Because four betting range don't occur all that often. It's pretty rare. I think Ben says in here, he's played about 100 hands with them. Like, I'd venture to bet there probably hasn't been much four betting if they weren't like four bet all ins with short stacks and stuff like that in this situation. So to go with a four bet here, to me, is a little bit game dependent on what has played out previously. How has this opponent played previously? And like, do you really like your first four bet in some of these spots to all of a sudden be aces, especially when your opponent goes with a big sizing? You know, they went to 10 bigs here. Which doesn't leave them a ton of playability left. So like I'm kind of in favor of this slow play just from the aspect of I'm guessing there probably hasn't been too aggressive of actions here. But the other things that I'm thinking about when I go through this are, one, what kind of tournament is this? It's a bounty builder. That kind of pushes me the other way. Like, you know, bounty builders, you want to get chips in the middle. You want to be able to go after those bounties. I want to know, do I cover this player? Because one, that allows us the ability to bust them and get their bounty, or are they potentially going to be going for our bounty? Because I think it can kind of play both ways in this type of situation. And then the other thing is, you know, the stack size of where we're at. Like, do we think we can get the rest of those 50 big blinds in comfortably post-flop? I think there's enough playability where we don't need to like really be building up that pot to be worried about getting the chips in the middle. All things kind of like to consider. Generally speaking, I think I'm kind of in favor of slow playing here.
And I should point out, yeah, Ben does make a comment a little later in the post that off about 100 hands, Villain's running 29, 26, 15. So that is a very aggressive player. They're not taking a lot of passive actions. And a 15% three bet, you know, I think what Ben's considering is if they're three betting a lot, they're going to have a lot of hands that are going to fold to our four bet. And we don't really want that. And I think I like your point, Taylor, about just what is our stack size here. If we're going to go into this with 22 big blinds in the middle, 23 big blinds in the middle, and we're going to have 50 back with an SBR of 2.5, we should be able to get that the rest of the stack in with a strong hand like aces. So we don't really have to four bet in the way that we would if we were playing like 100 big blinds in order to make sure that we'd get that last chip in. Rob, did you have something there?
I was just going to agree with what Taylor was saying. Basically, looking at GTO charts, it says you should four bet here. But then, you know, we had a book study, The Poker Brain, where Matt Matros said it's very difficult to come up with a balanced four bet range. And he generally calls most of the time in these spots and doesn't even worry about trying to have a four bet range, which, you know, it, and I think I, depending on chip stacks, you might do it a little bit differently. You know, you might want to try to get it all in on pre-flop on some of these types of situations, but generally in this stack depth, you don't have a lot of four betting without going all in.
Yeah.
So I like the slow play, especially when we consider that this guy has a 15% three bet,
yeah,
which is very, very wide. If you consider it against a population of what we see three betting, I mean, if we see somebody 7% three betting is generally a little wider than most anyway, you know, I mean, most people are going to be less than 5% yes on the C bets. Because they're going to be doing just with aces and kings and queens and ace king. So you know that he's going to be much wider in his three betting range. So you can take advantage of that by just calling on the preflop.
And the only other piece of information that I think Taylor mentioned earlier is does the size of the three bet indicate anything about the strength of their hand? Because some players that three bet a lot, they might have sizing tells where they're three betting a little smaller with a lot of their hands in position, where if you fold, it's okay. If they call, if you call, it's okay. They get to play in position, but they might size up with some of their hands like jacks and ace king, or, you know, maybe just some of their premiums. I'd love to know if we've seen this guy three betting a lot, has it been to the same sizing all the time? Because if he normally three bets to like seven or eight big blinds, but now he's choosing to do it to 10, that for me, that's an argument for bringing the four bet when I have a hand as strong as aces, because he might be telling me I've got a hand I want to go with. Chris, you had something there, I think.
Well, I like this conversation, but I'm going to take the flip side just as a counter. There are three reasons why I like a four bet here. Number one, I think that these numbers, when we see players, well, I guess I'd like to know a little bit even more about this player. When we see players that have a 29, 26, 15, some of those players, yes, will fold a lot because they're raising a lot of garbage. But I'm thinking of some players that once they have that sort of like tendency in themselves that they can't quite help themselves. So I would never jam here with aces. Mm. But I like a very small four bet. And if this player is that kind of player that just like doesn't like to be played back at, that likes to sort of push people around, I like to find that out, kind of that kind of thing when I've got aces. Mm. Because now if they jam, I'm like happy to, you know, just snap call. So that's one reason I like it, to sort of like figure out those numbers. Secondly, we're going to be out of position in this hand. If this was coming out of the blinds, I'd be much happier to call, but, even aces are hard to play out of position. I just really like being able to establish having a four bet, not all in these kind of spots. When we're kind of exactly this deep, I think it's a really nice play to have in your, but if you're going to do it, you want to be able to have hands like aces. If you're going to do it ever without aces.
And especially when this is aggressive players on your left and is going to be an aggressive player on your left all night. Like you definitely, there's an argument for just four betting non-zero percentage of the time, so that they kind of, maybe that'll slow them up on the three bets sometimes too. Was that it, Chris, for those?
That's all I got. That's all I'm worth.
No, I think the position's a really good one too, because I think that's an underrated factor. Yeah, Taylor.
Yeah, and another thing, like with the small four bet, there's kind of like an ego thing to it too. If they're this aggressive and then they get four bet small and they're getting a good price, like there's certain aggressive people that are just like, I'm just never going to fold in that spot. I see it a lot in spots where like an aggressive player in position gets check raised on the flop. And it's like, you check raise me, not all that big. Like I have to call one, even if I'm, you know, just calling with ace high or king high or something like that. Like I can't just let it go just yet. And like that, this, in my opinion, like one of those like other small reasons just to like go for that small four bet, because like they may just have that like ego problem of like they can't not call in this spot.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So as played, so we'll just, I'll advance through the post here a little bit. So Ben says, I decided to call mostly because this player is super active, playing lots of hands. I don't want to lose them if I put in a big four bet or a jam. And then he goes and describes their numbers. And I think that's the same kind of thing we were talking about here. But maybe that small four bet is the exploit that we use in a spot like this at this stack depth. So, okay, last question before we move on to the next part. Would you do that with other hands as well? Or is that just a super nutted range? Chris, you unmuted for a second there. Right. So then you also have this. So what are some of the other hands that you'd make this small four bet with as well?
I mean, I think you the hands that I really like here are the ones that have blocker qualities, you know, that have an ace in their hand. Those kind of ace wheel suited ones are really good. The other ones, you know, don't kill me, but are, I think, really small pairs. Mm-hmm. Can be really attractive here because they're easy to fold when we get jammed on. When called, they can flop a set, a very hidden set, and we can get stacks in and get paid. So those are probably, and I don't think we need much more than right. a few hands like that. Yeah. So it's just, and it's not like every ace wheel suited and every small pocket pair we're doing this with. It's just, we got to have a system for picking a few of them to do that with.
Yeah. And I think people, when we talk about like balancing ranges, people feel like you have to have an equal number of bluffs and value combos. And that could not be further from the truth. You really only need a few bluff combos to balance a value range, especially in a spot like four betting like this, because you don't have that many value four bets. So there's not a very wide range to balance. So if you're doing it with, so Chris, like aces, kings, ace king offsuit or ace king suited, and then like ace five suited, pocket fives, is that kind of how it feels?
Rob, yeah, I don't.
Sounds I good don't, to me.
I agree with that for the most part, but I don't believe I'd put small pocket pairs in that three bet range or that four bet range. I like the aces, kings, queens, ace king suited or otherwise, and like your ace four, ace five suited. That's your polarized range. You got a few little cards up there, and if they do call, you still have a lot of potential with those. The problem with pocket pairs is they're only good if you flop a set, and you're not going to flop a set as often as you're going to flop a flush draw or a straight draw with hands like ace five, ace four. You're going to have either a flush draw or a backdoor flush draw, straight draw, that type of thing. So you get a little bit more board coverage with those than you do with the pairs. If anything, if you wanted to add some of those little cards, you might want to consider some suited connectors, because then you have some two pair opportunities that you wouldn't have with the mm-hmm. small pocket pairs. But again, I think I like just the arrow right in the corner, you know, queen, king, ace, king, ace, king, and then a couple of the ace four, ace five suiteds as a nice polarized range if you're going to four bet.
And I think part of this comes down to how you want to be playing post flop too, because the nice thing about the suited wheel aces and the suited connectors is that they give you a lot of boards that you can continue on when you flop a draw. And if you're in a dynamic at the table where you want to be c-betting and double barreling, and you're going to win pots post flop, then having those opportunities to continue betting post flop to represent the stronger parts of your range, the aces and the kings and that kind of thing, that is super valuable. And then in the other instances, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely a fan of flopping sets. People, regular listeners will know that's the only way that I make any money in this game. So that's always a good idea. However you can draw that up.
And so, no matter what, it's going to be hard to have board coverage in a four bet range.
That's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. And that is let's just expand that a little bit, because three bet ranges already are pretty tight and they tend to favor Broadway flops, but four bet ranges are very tight. And as you've seen us talking about it here, even looking for examples of other ways to balance it out, it's mostly queen, king, and ace hands with some others. So you don't, and let's not let like fancy play syndrome take us to the woodshed here either. You don't actually need to cover all the boards. The strength of your hand, having overpairs on almost every board, is already pretty strong. And that will make up a big part of your four betting range. All right. So we did call, and the flop comes king of clubs, queen of diamonds, king of hearts. We've got the ace of clubs and the ace of hearts. There's 22.76 big blinds in the pot, and we have 45.75 behind. So we've got almost perfectly an SPR of almost exactly two. We check, and they bet about a quarter pot into 22.76. They bet 5.69 big blinds. And so I think we're checking all the time here, right? When we call the three bet and we're out of possession, we're not leading with anything. So that's a pretty trivial decision. When they bet quarter pot here, Ben asks, should we raise now, especially facing the small bet, or should we call? Obviously, we're not folding. My first reaction is that in a three bet pot on a king, king, queen board, it's always going to be a small bet. There's no reason for our opponent to be making any big bets here. So the small bet doesn't necessarily indicate weakness because they can leverage a lot of power with that small bet size. That being said, what does the gang here like? Do you like a call or a raise here more? Rob?
I like a call 100% of the time. What we've done by calling pre-flop and then seeing this type of flop out of position is we've really condensed our range. We can't really just go all in because what is he going to call us with? He's going to call us with a king. Right. We're dead.
Yeah.
Right. So we don't know yet because we're out of position. That makes it very difficult. So we are more or less in that condensed range where we're just bluff catching at this time.
Yep.
And so there's nothing we can do when we're in that spot except for call.
Yeah, we'd love to get more information about this player's hand on future streets. Maybe they slow down. Maybe they change the sizing on the turn. Because they have a lot of hands that don't have a king in it that would be three betting, that would be C betting here. And we're ahead of a lot of those hands. If they don't have a king or exactly pocket queens, then we're ahead. And that's going to be a lot of the hands that they choose to C bet here. So I think it makes sense to me to call here as well. Chris and Taylor, any other insights at that point? Uncontroversial call?
Totally agree. I would never raise this.
Okay.
Yeah. I think calling here is the obvious play. I mean, if we just think, like, what are we raising with in this spot?
Right.
Like, I don't even think we want to be raising all that much in this spot. Even if we had a king, if we had a queen, if we had, you know, a jack 10 for some sort of draw, like, I don't think much of our range at all wants to be raising here. So I feel like this is a very simple, like, we're either calling or we're folding in this spot. And then if we did choose to raise, like, what are we hoping they're going to call us with?
Right.
Like, I guess we're hoping that they find a call with a queen. But even that's probably a tough call for them. If they have like jacks or lower, they're just going to fold, which, you know, we're doing great against. If they have a queen, we're doing great against it. If we have the king, then we're, you know, toast.
Yeah.
So it's like, do you really just want to, like, allow them to make perfect decisions against you if you raise here? So I don't think it makes any sense to raise. I think it's just very clearly a call.
I think we should shove all in and get him off a chop. I put him on pocket aces. He's got pocket aces too. I think we can get him off. We can ref a king here and get him off. Just here's kidding, Rob.
Here's the other thing. It, you know, the title of the post is how far do we slow play?
Yeah.
Well, we've already slow played as far as we can right now, because that we slow played the flop or pre-flop. There is no possible way we're slow playing anything more because of the texture of the board.
Yeah. So because you're saying that typically when people talk about slow playing, it's taking a very strong hand and taking a passive line with it. When the board runs king, queen, king, we actually don't have as strong a hand as we used to. And so I think what you said earlier, we actually have more of a bluff catcher than a value hand at this point. So I think that's right. And I think, you know, you can get into this mind frame where you've got pocket aces, you decided to slow play it pre-flop, and now you're still in like this trap mode, this trap mindset. But I think you nailed it, man. This is like one of the very few flops where you actually don't feel nearly as strong about your hand as you did before. So it's not even really correct to call it slow playing anymore. Now it's just a question of how do we play this hand? That's a great point. So Ben does call. The turn is the four of diamonds, Bricktown, as he puts it, making the board king of clubs, queen of diamonds, king of hearts, four of diamonds. It does bring in the backdoor flush draw, but overall, this is a very nothing card, says Ben. We check the turn, and they bet 14.26 big blinds into the pot of 34. So same question. Do we jam here, or do we keep calling down to the river? At this point, let me see. We bet 6 out of our 22. So we actually, this is pretty close to our remaining stack here. So if we did jam, it would only be for a few more big blinds. What do you think, gang? What are the factors that would encourage you to call versus jamming here? And how trivial is the decision when you have so few chips behind?
Well, we don't have so few chips behind, right? Like, we started with 60. We put 10 in preflop and then 5.5, 6 on the flop.
Oh, you're right. No, I'm way off.
This is for another 14. So we probably have 45 behind.
And no, we had 45 behind before the bet.
Yeah, we've got
40 behind.
38 behind. Yeah, sorry, I screwed up the math. I thought we had 22 to start. But yeah, so we've got like an extra 20 at least. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it feels like this bet would be threatening a lot of our stack. But like, if we called here and then folded on the river, we'd still have 30
big blinds. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there still is a lot of play left to be had on the river here.
Yes. Forget what I said about only having a few chips back. That was just a math error on my part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so then,
I mean, this is the spot essentially where they're putting us to the test, right?
Yes.
Like, we're starting to feel like, okay, we're going to like get our whole stack in, which pre-flop we really wanted to do. Now in this flop, we don't really want to. So we're kind of, you know, stuck in that spot. Again, I want to know, do we cover them or do they cover us? Because that's really a...
They cover us.
They cover us in this hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
They had 10 big blinds more than us to start the hand.
Okay, thanks. I should have read stuff, but appreciate that, guys. But if them covering us, you know, that more reason for them to put pressure on us in this spot. We talked about how they have a 15% three betting range, so they have a lot of stuff here. Do we think they would continue with betting just a queen in this spot? I think so. And if the answer in your mind is yes, that they're going to keep betting a queen here, I think we have to just call down. On all runouts, I guess we could potentially fold on a queen river. That might make sense. But I feel like I'm just going to call down in this spot. I'm not going to raise. I want them to keep betting their various hands. If they check a queen on the river back to us, I'm not upset.
Right.
Like, I don't feel like I missed a ton of value there. So I'm just going to call down in this spot.
Yep. I noticed that we do have the ace of, we don't have the ace of diamonds. So even though it brings a backdoor flush draw, we don't get a chance to, you know, block any of those combos. So they could have had a two diamond hand that they bet on the flop small because it's just a good flop for the pre-flop three better. And now they've backed into a flush draw. So I think there are some legitimate combos that we could put them on that aren't a king.
Yeah, that's
ten of diamonds, jack ten of diamonds, ace ten of diamonds, jack of diamonds, like all possible.
Yeah,
Rob, I think all the jack ten suiteds are especially somebody this with this happy of a three bet is our in range here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I'm thinking, I like what Taylor said about calling here, and I think with the plan of probably needing to call any river except a queen, and I might include a nine in that. A nine gives me
gives
it willies.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll take an ace. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're playing bluff catcher here.
Right.
We're playing bluff catcher here. That's what we ended up with on the flop. We ended up with a bluff catcher, and there's not really much we can do about it. We're co- counting on this person to be wide enough and aggressive enough that he's doing this with a lot of things that we are ahead of right now. We know, knowing that he can be bluffing a lot and probably bluffing more than he should be. Right. So yeah, to Chris's point, there's only two cards that are really scary. And I don't know that even on a nine, I think I still call the river. A queen, you know, that is definitely scary, but a nine, I think there's so much more in his range besides Jack 10 suited that we can still call off on the river.
Now, this is taking me back to an earlier book study that Rob Washington did of Play Optimal Poker. I'm not going to be able maybe you can see it there on the screen by Andrew Brokas. Well, we were talking about the toy game and how our opponent, who has the polarized range here, should be betting into us. And as we're in the condensed portion of our range, as Rob pointed out earlier, the one thing we should not do is raise. We can call, we can fold, but raising only allows our opponents to play perfectly against us, to fold the bottom half of their polarized range and to continue with the upper half of their polarized range. So there might be times when that's worth doing because there's so much in the pot already, or some aspect of tournament dynamics or the cash table dynamics. But for the most part, we want to let them continue bluffing if they're going to bluff. And if they've got it, we're going to pay them off because we're just too high in our own range not to pay them off on most rivers. So I think that all makes sense to me. So
can I add to that, just to like close off that point, like they have a polarized range. And I think part of the upper part of their polarized range is hands that we actually beat.
Yes.
Like I think they include queen jack suited and stuff like that. Ace queen in their upper part of their range. And we beat that. And I think that's just all the more reason. If we can beat part of like the top hands of that they're betting, that gives us all the more reason to go into call down mode.
And that's what, so there's some responses in here. I always encourage our listeners. I'll put the link to this post in the show notes. Go check out the post yourself. Keith Monkey System Brandt has a similar thought, saying that if we call this turn bet, we're committed to the pot. So we're calling with a plan to call a river jam or possibly reverse the action and lead the river. If you think that this opponent's bluffing at a frequency significantly above GTO, then slow playing is fine. You'll sometimes lose a sizable pot when they outdraw you, but in the long run, it's profitable to play bluff catchers against players that overbluff. And that does make a lot of sense. And that is a great way to be thinking about it. He also gets into slightly more sophisticated stuff about reversing the action on the turn or the river, ways that you can polarize your own range, and some stats you might use for that. And if folks want to check that out, just click the link in the show notes and you can see Keith's response to this forum post. So that's how Ben ends it. We don't get results here. So I don't know how that hand ended up. But I guess what else can we talk about here before we roll on out of here? Is there anything about the way that we've played the hand that might influence our opponent to make different actions with different parts of their range? Or like, are we influencing their play by under-repping our hand? And does that mean that then we have to call down more because we've induced more bluffs? Is that the kind of fancy play syndrome that I seem to be completely unable to escape? Chris, you unmuted earlier. I don't know if it was about that or something else.
Well, I was going to say something slightly different just about this, but I think it might relate to, and that is that I don't think we need to like get stuck with a plan that comes pre-flop and we're like, okay, we're playing this slow play and then sort of like stick with it. And the other thing I would say to this is the thing that I was going to say is that on this turn, and given that this is a three bet pot and we're getting a significant bet from our opponent after sort of they're double barreling in this spot on a fairly scary board when we had a three bet pot. I like how we've talked about this player and that they're pretty wide and they're pretty aggressive and we expect them to be bluffing a lot. But I just think I would add is like, even though we came into this with the idea of slow playing and like, let's get value with our aces, there are a lot of opponents where I would fold this turn.
Yep.
Pretty happily and easily. And so I think even though we have that sort of mindset starting off, we've got to be able to adjust to think about, okay, what are the ranges that are doing this? And if there's like somebody who's not three betting very often, not very aggressive, and they suddenly start waking up and blasting into me twice, it doesn't matter that I was like, oh, I've got this tight player. I don't want to scare them off. I'm going to slow play them with my aces. And then I get to the flop and they bet, and then they blast again on the turn. I'm not liking this hand very much anymore. So I think that we've got to be able to adjust in those spots too, and be capable of folding this turn sometimes.
Yeah. When I was playing in the monster stack earlier this summer, I was playing with a guy to my right named Mark, and he had a really cool little cheat sheet that you could use at the tables, which was, I joke, it was just a hand ranking card that comes in all the decks of cards. And we were having a lot of fun with like whether this was real time assistance and should it be allowed at the table and that kind of thing. But I did check Mark's chart, and pocket aces is actually only a one pair hand. And if you compare that to the other hands on the chart, you'll see that one pair is actually pretty low on the chart. There are a lot of hands that are stronger than one pair. You might be surprised. Rob?
Well, I was just going to say, to respond to what Chris said, totally agree 100%. The only issue is there's certain people that will overvalue other hands that we're ahead of,
yeah,
like the ace queen. You know, they'll look at the ace queen and say, well, I bet he didn't raise me on the flop, so he can't have a king.
Yep.
So I must have the nuts here, and then just go crazy on the double barrel. So it is really player dependent. And there are some players that are going to overvalue the strength of their hand.
Yep. And that's why I think, you know, knowing how they're interpreting your action is really important here as well, because you've called a three bet out of position. You called a C bet on this flop, and then you called a continuation bet on the turn. So you're not doing that with nothing either. And stacks are low enough. You could have a king here if you're getting tricky with it. This screams queen to me. Like, this is like, we'd do this with a queen, I think, a lot of the time. Ace queen or I guess queen jack would be the next best one available to us. So that would be the other question, is this opponent going to triple barrel a queen? Are they going to bet the river with a queen once we're this sticky? And that might also inform whether we're going to call the turn bet or not, because I do think Monkey System is onto something when he says, if we call the turn bet, we should probably call the river, unless as you say, Chris, it's like a queen or a nine. Is that a fair generalization to make here, that the turn is the real inflection point here?
Yeah. I mean, just, I find it so much easier just to, like, you know, like, put yourself in your opponent's spot and like put them as like them. Like, if I'm sitting through this, like, and I'm trying to think, okay, I'm playing against Rob Washam here. He three bet me. I just called with my aces, and then there was this king, queen, king board. What does Rob bet into me on the flop? And then what is Rob going to continue with on the turn here? And if Rob has ace, queen, jack, something like that, is he going to bet both the turn and the river here? Like, I'm just going to guess for you, Rob. I don't think you're betting both turn and river here with ace, queen, or queen, jack. So if I play this and I call the turn and then you go all in on the river, I'm probably folding, because I don't think you're going to make that next bet with a queen. And I don't think you're going to continue with three barrels with like jack 10 when jack 10 misses. Like, I think you only have a king there. So I'm going to play that way against Rob in this type of spot. And like, I'll do that differently. And like, would I do that versus Chris? Would I do that versus Jim? Would I do this versus random player on the internet that has aggressive stats and like stuff like that? And like, I feel like it's a lot easier to like actually like try and conceptualize those different types of things. And then it allows you to like kind of like free up, like, yes, it's okay to call turn and fold this river, because this is how I think Rob would play in this spot. And I'm playing against Rob in this spot. So like, you know, like, I feel like that just makes it a whole lot easier. It's not this like black and white situation. You have to understand who you're playing against.
I love that. And the episode that came out last week was all about kind of getting married to playing GTO at the tables and why that was a mistake. and why the real art in poker is about playing specifically against the actual people around the table with you, because they're the ones making the mistakes that you're trying to exploit. And so you have to kind of tailor your game to the people that are actually around the table. Rob?
Yeah, I was going to agree with Taylor because my stats don't look anything like this guy's stats. I'm much tighter and I don't three bet quite as much as this guy. So Taylor would be totally correct in folding the turn as soon as I double barrel.
There you go. So remember that, folks, when Rob starts firing, find the fold button. Old man coffee, he's always got it. Well, I think that was a good conversation. I think Ben put some good spots in front of us here. Used just the right kind of language to pique our interest. Well done, Ben. And Ben, we're all curious to know what the results were. Did you call the turn? I don't think he folded. He was talking about either ending the slow play and jam or keep calling down to the river. So I think if we can get him back on the show, he'll at least tell us what happened on the river. So thank you, Ben, for that. Thank you, Taylor, Chris, and Rob, for your support and your insights tonight. Of course, thank you to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. And most of all, thanks to you, the listeners. We couldn't do it without you. So thanks for all you do, and we'll see you again next week. Have a good night.